Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
You study physics. I've started off with an ambitious thing of actually reading a textbook end to end, and I'll actually get through that. But it's actually taking about 2 hours to read each individual chapter, and when I read it, having studied it, I thought it's a very thorough book. But that's not perhaps how the way I actually would teach school children. The overall idea is that it's part of my cardiac intellectual rehabilitation, so having that information rebooted in my head, I should be able to explain things more clearly. So one of the things is that actually push comes to shove when I'm in the classroom and setting things up, rather than actually just putting the textbook and grinding them through and actually having the various students drop off, I should be able to discuss it and put it forward. And so during the time, I need to be able to actually just summarise and put it in very, very simple terms. So the sort of the style of actually pushing through a textbook or actually just grinding through books is a bit like a scene from the Conan the Barbarian. You know, where the success is measured by the number of Conan Barbarians you produce. So what happens is that there's a 1970 film with Arnold Schwarzenegger, and these raiders raid a village and steal all the children, and eventually the children are all chained to this gigantic four armed, rotating sort of mill, and they're whipped and they're aimed to push it around and around in a circle. And scene by scene, you're shown occasionally one or two children die, and then eventually that three die, and at the very end is pushing this mill around all by himself is Conan the Barbarian. Now, it's a great figurative way. It's a very successful way to produce Conan Barbarians, but it's not necessarily the best way to produce people. So, although what I'm reading is really, really good and really well structured, and you get the background information, there's sort of little tidbits I didn't know that for units, preface units like Kilo and Mega and Giga, the things which are bigger, are Greek prefix, and things which are smaller, like Centa and Milli, are Latin. They're sort of things, very fascinating. But if people are straying to understand things at the very start, it's hard to get going. So let's just go off the top of my head, having read this, and see how the information comes out. Physics is the study of the universe, all aspects of the observable and unobservable universe, or you can observe things and infer things which are unobservable. That's a little bit step. So this explains basically why things happen in time and space in our universe. So that's the aim of it, and the sort of fundamental aspects of observation is actually taking measurements, and measurements are different from a counting. So you can count the amount of money you've got in your wallet, and that will be $100 or $101.10. But if you were to weigh it, that's a different thing, because that weighing can be done to arbitrary precision. And so we have the idea of taking a measurement of something, and the measurement is done by writing it down in numbers, and there's, I suppose, an informal idea of two things come together for a measurement, if you're measuring something, and there are basic physics reserve physics terms to remember to measure the, you could say how big it is, or its volume. Its volume is related, and its volume are specific units. And so there's a thing that we do. We can actually say a number, describe a number, relative number, but there are ways that we write numbers. And there's sort of, basically there's two aspects, two ways to write a number, or probably three ways, two ways. this right out in longhand. And the important thing is to actually now say, look, 2013, probably 2015, 2011, we've actually come down hard and said, look, this is how science numbers are going to be written. Obviously, it doesn't get percolated through the schools. People go, oh, I've been taught this for years. So let's look at the way you'd write a million and a millionth. This is, I've said a millionth past a million. The way you'd write it in a number, in the, I suppose the old way is 1, 3 zeros, decimal point, and so on. And the decimal point is a full stop at the bottom of the page. That's important, not the bottom of the page, but the bottom of the line. Now, I suppose the most important thing to say is, look, the commas are gone. So we're into measurements, doing observations, and physics is the observable universe, and you run on observations, and we're taking measurements, and we're going to measure something, a volume or a mass or something like that. So you measure physical, assigned physical quantities. You can in assigned units, so there's agreed things that you do, everyone understands is measured and measured in a particular way, and therefore that's sort of the fundamental words and language. And so we're just going down here, this little track to say how you should write them. So this is not in the textbook, this has come out recently from this textbook. So commas are gone, and so a million is one. Now, get your mind around to this half space. So, rather than a comma, it's a reduced space. So I actually go in, when I'm doing this, I have to go in laboriously. Microsoft doesn't do it for you. You have to. Microsoft is coming to the party, has come to the party a few times, but essentially it's not there. So there's such thing. So if you're writing in, you have a font of, say, 12 times Roman, this, but also an agreed font. The space, you have to actually reduce it to a space of font eight will reduce space, and then it will look right. So it's one half space, 3 zeros, half space, 3 zeros, decimal point, 3 zeros, half space, 2 zeros, and one. It's 6 decimal, it's going to be really think a tenth, and a one, that's correct. That's how you'd write it there, that's the definition. Then you'd leave a small space, and then, say if it was kilograms, it would be kg. But importantly, the kg is a small k and a g, so I just keep on going inside the hospital. I'm visiting people in the hospital at the moment, and I just look at the lift, and it's got a capital KG because everything's written in. Look, if you write something in capital letters, everything's capitalized. You can't capitalize a unit. So I go in the lift, I look up the lift, and it's written maximum capacity 1,300 kg. It's big KG. Or I'll look underneath someone's hospital's bed, and they'll say maximum lifting 120, no space, capital KG. What's that all about? Or I'll look at a medicine cup, and it will say 30 megalitres, capital ML. It's not even a capital. Litres is the one exception for the sort of common unit rules. Liter is it with a capital L, because I don't have a small L. So they're the sort of fundamental units that we measure. And throw out all your standard units of measures. Physics have come in with procedural way of getting procedural rather than artifact driven way. I pretty well think the kilogram is about to be chopped off as no longer an artifact. I'd like to wave goodbye. I'd like to be actually standing in front of the original kilogram and watch it there at the stroke of midnight on a particular day, 2020. I hope it's done by then, at least. I would stand and watch there and suddenly watch that mass, the kilogram, that the human race, I'd be, you know, that would be, I'd pay quite a lot of money to fly to Paris and watch the kilogram disappear, the artifact kilogram disappear, and, you know, it has been the kilogram, an artifact of the human race. It's sort of, I don't know, a lot of people would like to be at a famous point in history. That would be a famous point in history for me. But the important thing is that you have a space and these units. Where are on units? There's, say Planck's constant is sort of pretty typical one, but I want to do it because that's multiplying two things together. Planck's constant is joule seconds, so it's capital J, so this is an important thing. For joule second, if I said 30 joules in a written sentence and I wrote the capital J, that would be incorrect. But if I refer to joules as the unit of energy in the sentence, it's a small j. If the capital J is I've got 3 joules, and that would mean 3 Mr. Joule. Mr. You get them to stand up there and you open the cupboard and there would be 3 of the people's stuff there. If you write the small letter, it's an important similarly that a small letter universe refers to the observable universe within the within that we can observe, and big U refers to all possible multiverses and things like that. Small thing like that. The way things we go ahead. What I want to say, Planck's constant, a unit of action and also a unit of angular momentum. Let's do it, Planck's constants. It's J mid dot S. Okay, now your teachers may not say this to you, but just go to the NIST factor, the style guide, and we're not pushing it, but that's the way measurements are written. Or it could be in momentum, angular momentum. So it would be kilograms dot meters squared dot second to the minus one. So it's momentum is kilograms times velocity times a distance. That's how you'd write Planck's constant. Why the fast? Well, the thing is, millisecond, it's got to be different from meters second. You might have a unit meters second, I don't know. I don't know if something is producing something at, you know, it's producing it. I don't know how you do it. I have to think of it. So there's the basic units how you write things down. And the other aspect I'm going to say is precision, that there are a few things which, well, it's hard. Well, one thing I have to say, there is one thing which has no precision, it's exact. That's the big K in Paris, the grand kilogram. That's got a mass of 1 kilogram. Everything else has got a mass of 1.000 kilograms beyond, and stuff like that. So everything you measure, your height, so again, in cardiac rehab, they have a Borg scale of how exhausted the house, as okay, in sort of stuffed. So zero is cruising and up to a 4 or 5, just not being able to breathe properly, and then you go up to really, really bad, and that's a scale. Now I sort of naturally, when I give the number, I give a point, I would say 2.7, or you know what I can see, but naturally they think it's a numerical number. A lot of people don't care about it, but it's actually really important physics that you write all your measurements with a decimal point up to the accuracy that you think it's there. And you can write plus or minus, but in general, and this is from machining and engineering, if you write a measurement for a length of dowel and it's 10, you will entirely get back 9.6 centimetres or 10.4 centimetres. That's that length there. But if you write 1.0, you'll get 9.91 to 10.09. Roughly speaking, as you measure it. So, in order to actually get it in general, to be ensured that you've got a measurement there. But what's more important is that if you go in more, it's the number of standard deviations of your accuracy, your certainty, as you go down here. But so all measurements have a decimal point, and there's rules for significant figures, so multiplication and addition and stuff like that. But essentially, the significant figures is the accuracy of the answer that you write down. So pi might be 3.1. We could say that pi is 3, so that's anywhere between 3.5 and 2.5 or 2.5. Five or whatever it is, a little bit above it. So what you write down is there, and you get significant figures out the other end, and there is a mechanical way of actually learning significant figures in a measurement that you use that comes through. However, even though it's been described in these books of doing it, the most important thing is that you don't think about significant figures, go far, you calculate far above significant figures, and at the end you reduce your answers in significant figures. But if you really want to do a good job, you write a computer program and you put the uncertainty at the start and actually let it progress through, because that's really the only way that you can do it. You eventually run a Monte Carlo situation to putting the combinations of uncertainty to actually produce a range of numbers, and you put it through. So by the time you put it into logarithms, exponentials, 1.1 power, and going, it's really hard to do significant figures. However, that's an important thing that at least you're aware of, that a measurement always has an error with it. A measurement is a number, but it's different from an enumeration. So the number of parents you've got is 2. The length of the DNA they provide in you is, what, say, 1.956 meters. And by saying it's 0.6, so this convention there, this convention of, if you read it without a uncertainty, or you can actually specify the uncertainty. Now, let's go. The measurement, if I measure my measurement, I weigh, 4 kilograms. And you say, this can't be right. What happens is that the 4 kilograms, once you've got a measurement, you've got to link that with objects. The quality of an object. So I link the 4 kilograms with me, and they say, "What does it mean?" Oh, well, when I was one day old, I was 4 kilograms. Oh, you should have told us that. But you've got to tell. So you've got a measurement, and you have to start adding more information in it to turn it to data. So you've got measurements, and measurements become data. I put it like that. So there's that aspect. You've got the idea of standardized things that you measure, standardized ways that you account for them. Then there's another level of understanding that Dyer's Hector's gone about, is that I suppose the different types of measurements. I'll just stop on that for a while. There's bulk measurements and individual measurements and conceptual time. So, and operational measurements, and all these things. If it's measured, written out in a book, and you're following it, and you've learned it before, it's really clear. But if you're listening to it, it's really hard to go. So there's the concept of time. There's second, but a second, we might understand what time is, but a second, you just follow the procedure, and it's by following this procedure you get a second out of this device. You may not understand what it is. There's a second. You can measure a mass of something, but there's also different types of things. There's bulk properties. A mass is the mass of an object, whereas the temperature or the conductivity is a bulk. A bulk property of something in bulk to get across it. So that's the actual mechanics, but those mechanics feed into a conceptual framework, and the framework goes that if we're going to understand the world, we're going to see patterns, and the description of patterns is called law. An explanation of those patterns is called a theory. A prediction of a result is called a hypothesis. Now, the hypothesis of prediction is good or it's bad. End of story. Then the significance of that, this is something which is missing from it here, and it's something which is really only, I believe, been teased out in big science where people have had to, communities had to go in and actually break in between a hypothesis and the implications of a hypothesis being right and getting into the significance. So this is not covered by the textbook, but this is more the significance. You've got a hypothesis is proved, you'll predict that this will happen, and I will do a test to test the hypothesis. So you have a hypothesis and you can keep on doing different tests of that hypothesis. That test will either agree or disagree with that hypothesis. You may not understand anything about the person's thinking. Then you've got this hard yakka to introduce this new idea, which is not in this textbook. And I suppose I think is a missing thing. This is one of the problems when you read these really good textbooks. You say, look, unfortunately, mate, I know a little bit more. I'm not big noting myself, but there is that little bit more. And this is the significance. So in your hypothesis, it's either your experiment either confirms or it either fits or it doesn't fit the hypothesis. Then you've got to go through the hard yakka. The hard yakka means work of saying whether it's numerically significant, this is reliable, or whether it's evidentially significant, this is valid. And then you've got to then, therefore, link it in further to theoretically significant, that is, how does it link to knowledge, as these grades of significance. So with that, we've got the general machinery of doing science. You take a measurement, and the measurement is written in a particular way. It can be written in scientific notation. I'm not going to go into that. But with units, it's important that you do have the different units. And and the units itself is, in fact, a number. It's one of those things. A kilogram is, in effect, a scale number. It is, in effect, a scale number. So you can change units by multiplying something by one. And this is something to get your head around. So a unit is really a symbol, but it's also pretty much somewhere sitting in the idea of a number. This is change units. So if you want to change from hours to seconds, 3,600 seconds over 1 hour, the 1 hour will cancel with the hour, and you'll get replaced a second. There's a formal way of doing it. There's a hand wave way of doing it. This is where these really thorough textbooks are good. You can actually come back and say, so you've got all those things together. Now we have to move on from this as the basic measurement and data. So you take measurements, you decorate the measurements with further additional linked information to create data. The data tests a hypothesis. A hypothesis is confirmed or denied, but it has to go through a series of processes where the hypothesis can achieve significance. And it's got a significance, therefore, of either agreeing with the law or developing a theory to get it all out. So I hope that's nice and clear. Then we get into, that's chapter one-ish. And chapter two is the description of motion. And I can see the way that they've done it, because it's the concept of motion, which is really big. the fact that the ancient Greeks couldn't divide time and distance, because they're different concepts, so you couldn't divide. That's a really interesting aspect in how you go into velocities and stuff like that. What I really think is, what you really have to start off with, I would start it off with a different thing by nominating position, and position at different times, and then working from that. So how do you describe the position as within so many, you know, rectilinear coordinates to describe position? There's different ways of describing positions. Or it could be a position along a track. You know, there's all different ways, but the idea of position, and that is an object, relative object, and this is the idea of space and location like that. So I'm going to go really, really quickly through here. And so with position, and then you decorate position with time, and then from position with time, you get various concepts. I think there's a historical viewpoint about how we only really developed the idea of velocity after 1300 and Newton, and developing the maths for the description of velocity. So, and it's really historically important to say that the problem of describing a velocity, something with an instantaneous and average velocity, we got there into several steps, and one of the steps was the invention of modern science. It's sort of, it's one of these circular things to get your head around. So that's a very interesting thing, how you and then they were just it was almost sneaking up on calculus. Now, it's one of these things, I don't know, saying we're not going to do calculus because we don't want to frighten you, it's just, I would do it normally and just say, and by the way, you've just learnt calculus, mate. If you've been doing something simple, you've just learnt calculus. And I wouldn't, I suppose, necessarily instruct it. But get people on the curve to actually measure, just trick them into doing it. So having a constant, constant velocity, an average velocity, and an instantaneous velocity to be able to actually link and get a series of exercises to eventually get doing that. And then you have the idea of displacement and a net displacement, and I think the way that this person did it beautifully was that you have got a tortoise in a box, and the tortoise is moving around. It's a very good conceptual viewpoint that people automatically know that I'm looking at the tortoise now, but they haven't been moving for a fair while. It's conceptually beautiful the way that this book is done. And then to actually do a succession of movements. Again, I would try and actually do it where you've got. I would have done it by a photograph of a tortoise at the start and the finish, and then moving the photo frame, so you can see the tortoise move to a new direction, and it forces you to actually work out the actual final position. So I'd go along there, and then you've got the definition of velocities and vector calculus. Again, my friend, is quite fun. This is basic vector algebra, how you subtract and add vectors. The way that it's described at length in the text does help people. I'll see if I can do another podcast summarising that. So that's what I'm trying to do at the moment, is actually give a tour of physics, having actually read the textbooks, and I'll plow through halfway through to chapter one. I'll continue going across here. I've got to get various people to various sporting and musical stuff. I've got a family of six children, so I've got to really work, and various people in the hospital, and myself being in the hospital, and a workplace which is very much considering you as a mechanical component to actually reproduce teaching as it's been understood. And I, of course, am trying to actually break the mould and produce a podcast per lesson and get international support. That's a lofty aim. I mightn't get there, but sure as hell, God, I'm going to have a go. I'm going to have a go at being able to podcast, learn a bit more, communicate a bit more,
working a bit more because I've sunk it for a day. I've got the skill to actually automatically start producing this and producing transcripts of all of this. It's there, whether it's a month or 6 months away, I'll get them. So I'll see you later on, and you'll hear these other horrendous podcasts as I just plow through these long books and read Cosmos magazines. The interesting thing, reading Cosmos magazines, some articles are built for podcasting. The interviewer articles are really good because it gives you a break for a fresh about what question we're going to deal with between each thing. I think that's a real fantastic mode for podcasting. I might actually adopt that for a podcast list. I think that's what I'll do. Thanks for listening.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.